नमः ओम विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामीन इति नामने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पश्चात्यादेशधारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। I'm primarily going to be addressing those devotees that were with us this morning. That is, I'm not going to repeat so many things. We heard this morning the glories of Mangalagiri and Panakala Swami. So now we're here at Mangalagiri. Up so many steps or up the long winding driveway to take darshan of this self-manifesting deity. Maybe some of you saw when we were at Kurmakshetra, there was a large chart of what Sri Vaishnavas consider to be the 108 self-manifesting deities. So that's where this deity came from. He just manifested himself. When we're looking at the altar, just to the pujari's side, or as we're looking at the altar to our left, is a murti of Nam Alvar, and down below is Ramanujacharya. To our right as we're facing the deity. And the Raja Lakshmi deity that is up higher is worshipped along with Lord Nrisingadev. And she's the main deity there. As if you took darshan, the pujari likely performed his mantra chanting and puja and offering kunkum powder and chandan into a tray. And in that tray, beneath all that pile of kunkum powder, is Sudarshan Chakra. And so prayers were offered to Sudarshan Chakra and two little murtis, one of Venu Gopal, Krishna, playing upon his flute, and Lakshmi. Govinda asked me, Radha or Lakshmi? I'm so accustomed to Radha Krishna, Radha, but I checked, and it's Lakshmi. He said, the pujari said, behind, there's three, and behind is Lakshmi. So in the middle is Sudarshan, and behind is Lakshmi. And Nrisinga Shila in the front, along with the worship of Lakshmi. Lakshmi Nrisinga. We didn't go yet because we came at a time when the deity was closed. But as our program concludes, we'll go to the temple where the Pandavas, or specifically Yudhisthira Maharaj, established a deity of Lord Nrisingadev where Bhima worshipped. We'll see that deity also. Very famous deity. In the narration found in Brahma Vaivarta Purana, there's different, just as there are different substances that are offered during the four different yugas, amrita, ghee, cow's milk, And jaggery. Did you taste the pepper in the jaggery? Very noticeable. Nice. And the name of the place also is identified different or differently according to each of the four yugas. This is Kali Yuga, and Mangalagiri is the name. But according to the Mahima, the history, the glories of this place, Totadri was the name known during Satya Yuga. The pastime connected with Satya Yuga is Yamaraj gathered up all the sinful persons in Satya Yuga. It's Satya Yuga, there are still persons doing sinful activity. He gathered them up and brought them here to Totadri and instructed them, if they pray to Lord Nrisingadev, then all of their sins will become eradicated and they'll be liberated and returned to Vaikuntha. Very powerful deity and a powerful place to seek forgiveness for one's sinful activities. During Treta Yuga, Ramchandra visited, where the name became differently known, Stutadri. When Ramchandra's pastimes were completed, as we read in Srimad Bhagavatam, he returned to the spiritual realm of Ayodhya with all of his associates. Well, almost all of his associates. Those that were left behind were those that had some trace of sinful contamination. They were instructed, go to Stutadri, offer your prayers and worship of Lord Nrisingadev, and all of your sinful reactions will be eradicated. And then you can return to the spiritual world of Vaikuntha also. In Dwarapa Yuga, the hill is known as Muktadri, Muktyadri. And the Leela, or the pastime that took place during Dwarapa Yuga, was, excuse my voice, Indra gathered up all the personalities, because in Treta Yuga and Satya Yuga, much less sinful activity, but degradation comes further in Dwarapa Yuga. So all those persons that, because of their fruitive activity, would be bound to the wheel of samsara, he gave very similar instruction. You come here to Muktyadri and you engage in worship of Lord Nrisingadev. And by the worship of Lord Nrisingadev, your souls become elevated to such a condition that the wheel of samsara will be broken and you can return to Vaikuntha. And in this age, Mangalagiri is the name by which this hill and this place is known. And Panakala Swami is specifically, he's known that way because of the offering that's made during this present age. Did you listen carefully? The Pujari said, listen carefully, as he said it in Telugu and someone translated. So I got down and listened. He allowed me to get very close. And then distinctly I heard a little belch. Polite. That was it. That's the sign says, okay, enough. Did you hear? No. Go back up again and see if you can hear. Yeah. I mentioned this morning that in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami states that there are three forms of the Lord, Lila avatars, who are most prominent: Krishna, Rama, and Nrisimha. And their prominence, Rupa Goswami writes, is in terms of their reciprocation or their loving dealing with his devotees. Not only Ram, Krishna, and Nrisimha annihilated the demoniac elements that were harassing the devotees, but they reciprocated in very wonderful, confidential ways with the devotees. This lila of accepting the offerings, taking half and leaving half, is one of those indications. I was thinking of Srila Prabhupada. One of the teaching methods that Srila Prabhupada would use after taking the devotees to different places, he would ask them, what is the lesson we have learned? One of them, I was present. It was a morning walk in New York. And we went to Battery Park in Brooklyn. And it was a very brisk morning, cold. And Prabhupada had just previously been in London. And we were walking through the park, and we walked over to a pond where there were some ducks, and the ducks came swimming over. So Prabhupada asked, does anybody have any prasadam we can give to the ducks? So somebody had something, and Prabhupada tossed some prasadam before the ducks. And he did that for a little while, and then he turned to us and said, so what is the lesson that we have learned? Always bring prasadam when you go on morning walks with Srila Prabhupada. Because who knows what he may want to do. That wasn't the lesson. He said, the lesson is, the duck that quacks the loudest gets the bread. And then he explained, one who is eager for the mercy of Krishna gets the mercy of Krishna. And he elaborated. Then another one, I wasn't present, but Bhagwat Das, who was hosting us when we visited Bhubaneswar, told that, because there was nothing, now there's a temple and there's a whole developed area in Bhubaneswar, but as I mentioned when we went there, it was as far as you could see in any direction, it was nothing. Literally, it was just agricultural field, and a lot of it was just barren land. Now it's very well developed. So one of the things that Prabhupada did, the devotees went on the morning walk and they went to the Bhubaneswar Zoo. So Bhagwat took us to the Bhubaneswar Zoo, and we went around, and at the end he said, at the end of the morning walk, because Bhagwat was there, Prabhupada said, so what have we just learned? Nobody knew what to say. And Prabhupada said, what we have learned is that intelligence is stronger than the greatest of physical strength. We saw the king of the jungle, a lion inside a cage. And he's inside a cage, although he's so powerful, because there's something more powerful. The intelligence is more powerful than physical strength. Then he went on to explain, we need to use our intelligence in service to Krishna, and that it is superlatively powerful. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upiyanti te. That knowledge that can take us to Krishna is the best of all knowledge, or best of all intelligence. Buddhi yoga. So now let me ask you, what have we learned today? When you come to Mangalagiri, be prepared to climb lots of steps. That's one thing we learned today. What else did we learn today? There are two choices. If you have a disposition towards life, like Namuchi, you can expect to be destroyed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if you have a disposition towards the Supreme Lord of love, then you can expect to be reciprocated with in a loving manner. Yayatam mam prapadyante tangs tathayava vachamyaham. Krishna indicates in Bhagavad Gita. During part of the yatra, I won't go into detail, but had a short conversation with one devotee who expressed a doubt, and it relates to this topic. The doubt was, is there really such a thing as free will? So I'm going to delve into that a little bit. Does the living entity really have free will? And this individual wasn't sure. They have their doubt. And the logic of that doubt goes something like this. They might say it differently than I'm about to say it, but something like this. Everything that happens in our life is under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like there's this teaching that says whatever happiness is to come is going to come, whatever suffering is going to come is going to come. So what free will do we really have? Ultimately, we're under the internal or the external energy of the Supreme Lord, so is there really free will? Because we're controlled, or we're controlled, or we're controlled. So is there really free will? And there's a logic that says, yes, the living entity has free will. The logic goes like this. The Atma and the Paramatma are qualitatively the same. Prabhupada liked to give the example of a gold ornament, say a gold ring or a gold necklace or some gold ornament, and a gold mine. They're qualitatively the same. Gold is gold. Quantitatively different, qualitatively the same. Or the other classic scriptural one is the drop of water from the ocean and the whole vast sea. You analyze the ingredients in a drop of water, how much salt and how much minerals and whatever else is there, And whatever is in the drop proportionally is there in the whole ocean. Qualitatively one, quantitatively different. So similarly, the living entity, the Atma and Paramatma, are qualitatively one. So if we want to propose that the living entity, in fact, doesn't have free will, then the converse would be, or the extended logic of that is, the Supreme Lord also doesn't have free will. And that's Karma Mimamsa philosophy. Karma Mimamsa philosophy is, it's not just impersonal, it's atheistic. Karma Mimamsa philosophy says, doesn't matter what you do. Excuse me. What doesn't matter whether there's God or not God. Because if there's not God, it doesn't matter. And if there is God, he is obliged. That is to say, he doesn't have free will. The law of karma is supreme. And if one does good activity, he gets a good result. One does bad activity, he gets a bad result. And God dispenses the good result and bad result. So supreme is karma. So just do good work and don't worry about whether there's God or not. You can worship God or not worship God, it really doesn't matter. But in the ultimate analysis, karma is supreme, so do good work. Karma Mimamsa philosophy. But the fact is, God has supreme free will. And because the unlimited supreme has unlimited free will, the tiny living entity has tiny free will. Qualitatively, the same. Quantitatively different. And Bhagavad Gita confirms that the living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme. Mamevamsa jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. Eternally, the fragmental part, tiny spark of the Supreme, fire. As the spark is unto the fire, the living entity is unto the Supreme. Part and parcel. Tiny fragmental part. So, back to the question, do we really have free will? We're tiny part and parcel of the Supreme. What's the real freedom of choice that we have? I heard Srila Prabhupada describe once about a living entity that comes, regains his spiritual life, and then desists due to worldly mindedness. He specifically said, this was in 1969, looking around the room and saying, many people come to Krishna consciousness and they engage in devotional service for some time. And after some time, they go away. And Prabhupada said, that is prapekatmaka shakti, or Maya has thrown him away. Maya has thrown him away because of his attitude towards Krishna, so Maya keeps him away. And then the living entity takes on some false identities other than I'm Krishna's eternal servant. We know this term as upadis, or avaranatmika shakti, the throwing potency and the covering potency. And that stems, so there's two levels of free will choices. We can choose Maya or Krishna. And within the realm of Maya, we also have limited choices. We can choose varieties of Maya. Limitedly, not unlimitedly. We can't just, oh, I'll be a millionaire. Or something. Or, oh, I'll be beautiful. Or I'll be born in the Rockefeller family or the Birla family. We're not unlimited in our free will choices. But we're moment to moment making choices, and based upon those choices, we have a certain amount of freedom or restriction. I think of it like a cow that's on the rope. And we don't do this in America, but in India it's done all the time. The cow is on a rope. And depending upon the length of the rope, the cow can go in a circle, a radius, and eat grass as far as the rope allows him to eat, and he can't go beyond that. And if the cowherd makes the rope shorter or makes the rope longer, he has greater or lesser freedom. Some freedom, not unlimited freedom, not just roaming the earth. But with some amount of freedom. According to our theistic choices, or choices in relation to the codes given by God, we have greater freedom. Prabhupada's example is the law-abiding citizen and the law-breaking citizen. Both are under the law of the state, but the law-abiding citizen has many freedoms. And the law-breaking citizen is in jail with very restricted freedom. He can move from this side of the cell to that side of the cell. But very restricted freedom. And one who is the law-abiding citizen has far greater freedom. Both are restricted. So the consideration of, do we have free will or do we not have free will? We're in the material realm, we're certainly restricted. And even in the spiritual realm, because the freedom is not there to become God. But in the spiritual realm, there's stages of freedom. One is, we can, for example, choose to take up the path of devotional service. Like this example Prabhupada gave of people come and then they go. We can choose to come and we can choose to stay. And in the course of staying, we can, as we evolve spiritually, as we gain greater freedom by greater intimacy of relationship with the Supreme Lord, there's varieties of transcendental mellow that awaken. We were hearing this from the talks with Ramananda Roy. The mirror image is upadhi, some designation. I'm a teacher, or I'm a mechanic, or I'm a cook, or whatever designation. I'm a grihastha, or I'm a sannyasi, or I'm a brahmachari. Varna and ashram designations. That's not who we are. The spiritual end is we have a spiritual identity as the eternal servant of Krishna. Moreover, we have a spiritual identity as within a particular rasa. Now, in that particular rasa, it's not like, I think I like that one. Maybe I'll try that one. But rather, there's an innate spiritual identity that every soul uniquely has in their relationship with Krishna. And if we make the free will choice to act in our relationship with Krishna, there's reciprocation. Krishna in course of time discloses so many things that prior to our taking up devotional service we had not the slightest clue. And not just information, but transformation of heart by making that free will choice. In the matter of free will choice, there's another will. And that's the supreme will. And the reciprocation of our will is in the hand of the supreme will. And that's love. In a loving dealing, it's two, the lover and the beloved. And the will of the lover and the will of the beloved is the essence of the relationship. And considering the will of the beloved and the will of the lover wishes to see the will of the beloved. So when one acts in devotional service, or the essence of devotional service is choosing to subordinate oneself to love. We don't have to. But willingly, we subordinate ourselves to love. We become controlled by love. We can become controlled by law, or we can become controlled by love. So if the idea, back to the question, is there free will? We're controlled or we're controlled? Sounds like we don't have free will because we're controlled. Because we're not master, we're the servant constitutionally. We're controlled. But the nature of that relationship between the servant and the master, or the part and parcel living entity and the supreme, is very much within that limitation of rope. There's very much opportunity for exercise of free will. Even in the worldly platform, that we're here instead of somewhere else. Some of you may live in Vijayawada, and some of us live in the other side of the planet. And we're here by a choice of will. And similarly, as we approach our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, once we're here, the whole of devotional service is to voluntarily, that means the free will volition, voluntarily place us subject to love. And I wanted to discuss one other point, and that is the difference between the love that's there with on reverence and the love that's there with sweetness. Love is on another platform besides and beyond duty. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches this. To engage in some activity because we're obliged to do so, or it is our duty to do so, that's good. It's not on the same platform as love. On the platform of love, one does so because of the dedication to the beloved, because I want to do so. Like nationalism is a reflection of that. Love of my country, or love of my family, or love of some kind of designation. But on the spiritual platform, it's free from designation and it's fully natural to the soul. And there are different qualities of love. There's awe and reverence. Just like at the top of the hill, not the very top of the hill, but the temple of Raja Lakshmi. If I hadn't asked, I wouldn't have found out. The kunkum was going onto that plate. And did you see the pile of kunkum? Big pile. All day long he's placing kunkum. He gave us some. Did anybody else here get a little kunkum to take with them? We'll try to figure out the right time to distribute to the devotees that didn't get. You barely could see Krishna and couldn't see Sankarshan at all, or Sudarshan. And when I asked, there's Krishna. He turned the deity around. There's Krishna holding his flute. And behind is Lakshmi. So the worship is with the conception of Krishna is a Leela avatar of Narayana, and he appears with Lakshmi. That's the mood, on reverence. Previously, when we were in contrast, previously we were in Rajmundry, where we heard about the talks between Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And those talks between Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are on another platform altogether. The platform of the loving exchanges between Radha and Krishna. In a poetic way, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes this topic is like nectar, different than jaggery. It's like condensed milk mixed with camphor, mixed with sugar candy. The activities of Ramananda Roy are compared to condensed milk. No, the activities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are compared to condensed milk. And the activity, you add the activities of Ramananda Roy interacting with Lord Chaitanya, and it's like adding rock candy. And then the talks between the two is like adding pinches of camphor. And you stir it all together and you get the sweetest nectar. But it's a different nectar than the one that's taken through the mouth orally. It's a nectar that one allows to enter into the ear. And Krishnadas Kaviraj then appeals, my dear reader, please listen to these conversations between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy without prejudice, without prior conception. Simply try to hear very carefully. And one who does so will, with faith, without doubting, and one who does so will be blessed with the ability to understand the most confidential topics about Lord Chaitanya and his nature. Just by hearing these conversations between Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because the dealings are way beyond on reverence. The dealings are very, very confidential interactions of Radha and Krishna. By Krishna is captivated by the love of Srimati Radharani. And Srimati Radharani becomes submissive to the loving service offered to Krishna and offered to her by her devotees. This is very, very, it's very different than on reverence. The very nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Independent Lord, becoming controlled by Radharani. And Radharani being submissive to the love of those who are serving Srimati Radharani. This is something that's not in the realm of Vaikuntha. The principle of love pervades both. The nature of that love and the intimacy of that love have degrees of taste and sweetness. So, In the matter of back to the starting point, we have two choices. The lesson is we can be controlled by Krishna's love, or we can be controlled by Krishna's, or be stopped, be terminated by, as Namuchi was terminated, or those whose hopes, mogasha moga karmano moga jnana vicheta saha rakshasim asarim chaiva, were defeated or destroyed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now, if that's the case, do we really have free will? We have free will. It's not unlimited like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's limited. But we can choose between the material, or Maya, and the spiritual reality. And within the spiritual reality, we can choose between varieties of taste. The gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that he's giving that taste of the sweetest form of love for Krishna as exhibited by the residents of Vrindavan. And even specifically, Vrajavadhu, the cowherd damsels of Vraja. He's freely giving that for those who are having the free will to accept it, to take it. There are free will choices to make for the living entity besides Maya and Krishna, or illusion and reality. There's varieties of love. And those who are carefully listening, just as Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, those who are very carefully listening to the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the message of Lord Chaitanya, will very quickly enter into that house of bhakti in Braja, where, along with the chanting of the holy name and hearing the wonderful pastimes of Krishna and his wonderful devotees, we can be drawn into that transcendental realm even within this lifetime by developing our Krishna consciousness, or reawakening our dormant Krishna consciousness by this very sublime method. So let us be voluntarily or willfully submissive and controlled by the love of Krishna. That's bhakti. And Krishna's loving devotees, those who are very dear to Krishna, let us become submissive and controlled by their love. That's the position of transcendental happiness and Krishna consciousness. I'm sorry for my voice again. It's difficult. So, any comments or questions?
At the temple upstairs, we saw how the panakam was offered to the deity. But how does Narasingadev give the 50% back? I didn't.
How does Narasingadev do what?
Give prasadam, 50% of the panakam. How does he give it back?
With the conch shell, the portion of it goes into the mouth, and when he, the rest is prasadam. And that's distributed, the prasadam of the Lord. Okay.